Just weeks to go now until Brexit. And the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, says if it's not sorted within 30 days, it will be no deal. So let's spell out some of the big questions for Northern Ireland, with only weeks now for us all to have answers. Is the border going to stay open on the 1st of November? If it does, is Northern Ireland the gateway into the UK for the whole of Europe? Think about that. Spain, Portugal, Poland, France, Italy. If any of these people want into the UK without checks, the open border into Northern Ireland will be the gateway. How will it not be? Meanwhile, if there then does need to be a border down the Irish Sea so that the UK is controlling some part of immigration, are British Northern Ireland citizens going to be checked when they're travelling to England, when they're travelling to Scotland and Wales? Are we back to those days again? Special airport corridors and queues for people in Northern Ireland? Another question, where are the customs checks going to be? Oh, the technology exists, we've been told. What is it? Where is it? Is it going in the next few weeks? And then the warnings from the government's own Operation Yellowhammer document, warning of medicine and food shortages. What's the latest on that? Arlene Foster said the other day that document was outdated. So we've been asking the DUP, well, if it's outdated, there must be a new one. Can anybody see it? Could the public see it? What's in it? Why won't the DUP share it with us? John Campbell, our business and economics core, is with us today.
Morning.
Morning to you, John.
Yes.
So that border, if it does remain open, as Boris Johnson said, the British government's going to do nothing, then that is a gateway into the UK for the whole of Europe, right?
I think we need to distinguish between goods and people. And I actually think the movement of people across that border is a bit of a red herring when we think what has been proposed by the British government. So what the government will want to do after Brexit is to limit the rights of other EU nationals, not Irish nationals, because we have a separate immigration arrangement for the whole of these islands. The government would want to limit the rights of EU nationals to come and work and live in the UK. And how will they do that? So there may be a system of work permits or whatever. What they are not proposing is to say that if you are coming from Spain to England, you will need a visa. Everything has to be sorted out in advance. An immigration officer will check your visa at the point of entry. That's not what's being proposed. What's being proposed is what they call point control rather than border control. So at the point at which you try to get a job or access a public service, that is when your immigration status is checked. So the thing is, right, so let's say I'm this Spanish person wanting to come and work in the UK, possibly illegally. Why would I fly from Barcelona to Dublin, cross the border, get the ferry, go to London and try and get a job? When all I need to do is get on the plane from Barcelona to London, come in as a tourist and just overstay.
But if you were a Spanish or whatever type of business from wherever, Poland, anywhere else, and you bring your stuff into Dublin, so you've got your stuff.
So we're talking goods here rather than people.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Right. So and you bring the stuff then into Northern Ireland, mm-hmm. it's unchecked.
Yeah.
I think it's porous. It's open.
So there's this.
So we'll, now it's in the UK.
Yeah. So we'll start talking about goods now as well. So the UK government has a plan which they've published for no deal about what they will do at the border in terms of the movement of goods. And what they have said is all goods coming from the Republic into Northern Ireland will not be subject to any new checks, controls, tariffs, nothing. So they say basically they'll pretend almost like, you know, nothing's happened. That goods flowing in from the Republic to Northern Ireland, which means from the whole of the single market effectively, will continue to flow unchecked. But at the same time, what they're also saying is but goods coming from the Republic into the rest of GB, so that would be the goods going from Dublin to Holyhead, they will be subject to new tariffs, they will be subject to new checks. So you could see a situation where suddenly the Dublin to Belfast motorway gets a hell of a lot more busy.
Big time.
Because people are saying, well, hold on a minute, this is how I get right. I won't have to pay my tariff going into GB if I just funnel it through Northern Ireland. Now, in theory, that will be illegal, but the
but that's my point. That's going to be what people are going to do.
Yeah, I think. And now, what HMRC, the tax man, has said is, listen, if you've always been selling your goods Dublin to Holyhead and you suddenly start taking them through Belfast, that's against the rules. And we'll come after you for that. But if they're if they're not checking anything at the Northern Ireland border, and they're not going to put in any new checks on the Irish Sea border, the enforcement might be pretty lax. And then the other question is, well, what happens to goods moving from Northern Ireland to the Republic? That has not been made completely explicit, but at the very least, those goods will be facing tariffs. Agricultural goods will face very high tariffs. They should also face checks, and the Irish government has admitted there will have to be checks somewhere, but not spelt out how or where.
So goods coming from Northern Ireland into the Republic, in other words, into Europe,
yeah,
there will have to be checks.
Yes.
And the Irish government has said so.
Yeah. So in their last no deal, big contingency plan, they said trade cannot be as frictionless as it is today. And Michel Barnier, who's the EU's chief negotiator, has said time and again, yeah, listen, there are checks which are needed if stuff is coming in to the EU from a non-EU country. And we're talking about the Irish government about how we do that. That's been one of the big unsaids. One of the things in all of this is what exactly the Irish government is going to do at the border in terms of protecting the single market after Brexit. And that's something we're still not clear on. Well, so just let me finish this point. So there is going to be an asymmetry. Stuff coming from south to north won't face tariffs and checks. Stuff going from north to south will face tariffs and probably checks.
Well, how could Northern Ireland businesses compete in that situation?
Well, the Ulster Farmers Union, I think last week, I think I was off, they said, well, hold on a minute, we need to rethink this. Because, so you could be in a situation where you're basically trying to sell your milk into the Republic and it faces a... Let's put it this way. You could sell your milk into the Republic. You'd face a big tariff on it. You'd be struggling to break even on that milk. That milk could then be processed into cheese in the Republic and then come back across the border.
Tariff-free. Oh, come on.
So that is the plan. Now, well, so the Ulster Farmers Union are increasingly antsy about that. Sammy Wilson from the DUP has said that should be revisited as well. And actually, my understanding is that in terms of some of the planning that's been done around, you know, what will happen in Northern Ireland in the event of no deal, one of the concerns when they talk about civil disobedience is frankly around farmers kind of, you know, blocking roads and whatnot.
Let's put some of these points to the TV MLA, Jim Allister, this morning. So what John has just spelt out there, so as a result of Brexit, and you're one of the advocates of Brexit, Northern Irish farmers would be paying tariffs to bring their goods into Dublin. Then they convert the likes of milk, the example that John has given us, into cheese, and their stuff comes back up here tariff-free.
I don't believe that's how it will be at all. I remind you that that document, which was pretty crazed in what it said about tariffs and no tariffs on the Northern Ireland border, was under the old government. I have not heard it endorsed by the new government. It was quite clear in its timing and its content that it was an attempt to bounce the DUP into accepting the backstop. And that was its primary purpose. I do not believe that will be the final position, because it would be an untenable position to say that goods from Northern Ireland would be subject to tariffs, but goods into Northern Ireland would be.
But this is where people like you have got us, Jim. We're only weeks away now and you're still talking about you don't believe. What's it going to be for these farmers who need to know right now?
All right, just be careful. This is where the majority in the United Kingdom have brought us.
This is where the majority in Northern Ireland voted against.
To endorse democratically Brexit. Now, the primary stumbling block in working out a regular, sensible arrangement has been the EU, because they have been so belligerent, because they think by their belligerence they can force a change in the democratic decision, which they will not do.
And that might be true, Jim. That might be
true.
But the reality for businesses in Northern Ireland who need certainty right now, ahead of the 31st of October, is what? Spell out the certainty they currently have about what's going to happen on the 1st of November.
The certainty they have is that if there's going to be a border, the only party who say they will be erecting a border is the EU. Because they take a view of how sacrosanct
to protect their single market.
Their single market is. So the EU, courtesy of their surrogate, the Irish Republic, and that's a treaty obligation on a frontier state, will have to provide a border. So when you strip away all the hoo-ha the actual providers of that border are to be the Republic of Ireland.
And will you get into that?
Let me finish the point. Mr. Coveney has admitted there will have to be checks. He's been very coy and evasive, and I listened to him yesterday on RTE, refusing to answer the questions about where these checks would be. But isn't this the irony? They tell us that they can do all these checks from north to south, away from the border.
Well, not all of them. They said they can't do the agri-food stuff away from the border. They've been pretty clear about that.
Yes, but the vast majority...
Well, not all of them, checks, though. Come on.
The vast majority of the checks...
But not all.
...Dublin has said can be done away.
But John Campbell's making the point to you, not all of them.
Well, we'll see about that.
What do you mean, we'll see? No.
Jim, you know the law. You know the EU law. Goods must be checked in the immediate vicinity of the point of entry into the single market in terms of agri-food. That's the law, isn't it?
In the immediate vicinity. That's a pretty elastic phrase.
What is the immediate vicinity then? How many miles away from the border?
Well, I don't know. That's a question for Dublin to answer. But if Dublin puts infrastructure in the border, Dublin puts infrastructure in the border. Don't blame me for that.
No, I'm not blaming you for that. But I'm just saying we need to be clear that they haven't said they can check everything away from the border.
Well, they have said they can check within the vicinity of the border.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I think you should be asking Mr. Coveney.
We're asking you because you're one of the advocates for Brexit in Northern Ireland. Can you provide businesses in Northern Ireland with the certainty that they now need?
Well, just a moment. Just let me deal with this Remainer gang up against the democratic decision. You know, the people who are going to provide the border are the Irish Republic. So go ask them.
No, we're asking as an advocate of Brexit.
Am I providing the border?
You are advocating Brexit.
Irish Republic will be
and John and I are not ganging up as Remainers. Here's what John and I are doing. We're ganging up on behalf... I've never ganged up with John Campbell in my life.
I wouldn't like the sound of that a bit.
But here's who we're ganging up on behalf of if we decide to do a little gang up. On behalf of businesses in Northern Ireland, whether they are Remainers or Leavers, they now have only days to go. So please provide them with the answer. Where are these checks going to be? And can you give them an assurance that Northern Irish goods will not be subject to tariffs while Irish goods coming back up the other way won't be?
Well, 2 points there. The checks from Northern Ireland to the Republic will be at the discretion exclusively of the Republic. So it's ridiculous to say to me, where will those checks be? Go ask Mr. Coveney.
So you don't know?
Putting those checks.
So you don't know?
How would I know? I'm not the Irish government. You know, deal with the realities. The check makers in this case of goods from Northern Ireland to the Republic are the Irish government, courtesy of the EU. So go ask them where they're putting their checks.
The reality at the minute is that...
As for goods coming from the south to Northern Ireland, I do not believe for one moment that the political paper that was circulated about no tariffs will be the position, because that is wholly untenable. Look, the truth is...
But you can't guarantee it, Jim, can you?
I don't know. I think the logic of that is that it would be untenable and it would be destructive.
You think and you don't know. And we're days away now from Brexit.
One thing which is important to say is
I'm neither the government in Northern Ireland nor the Republic.
But you're an advocate for Brexit.
I am. And Brexit, what's Brexit about? It's about the people of the United Kingdom rightly deciding to make their own laws, spend their own money.
I mean, well, you can't tell people in this part of the United Kingdom who are business owners what they're going to be facing in a few days' time.
Well, they're going to be facing, if the EU forces a no-deal Brexit, into many adjustments, I'm sure. But at the end of it, they will be freed from the shackles of Brussels, benefiting from the free trade with the rest of the world, where the growth in the world is. And that's a goal worth striving for.
I just think one thing that's important to say at the moment about when we're talking about, you know, agri-food product being checked or whatever as it crosses the border. As it stands at the moment, in the event of no deal, Northern Ireland wouldn't be able to sell 1 milliliter of milk or one sausage into the Republic, because there is a thing known in the EU as third country listing. So that's basically the EU says, right, OK, we accept that your stuff is good enough to be in our market. And that's something that they grant unilaterally. Now, before the last Brexit deadline, they did give the UK third country listing, but that has now lapsed, so they will have to grant that again. Now, there's supposed to be a meeting in October at which they will do that, but they don't have to automatically do it. Now, in practice, I think they will give the UK third country listing.
Setting up another straw man.
Well, no, listen, see, I'm just...
That's the practice with the BBC.
Well, you know, Jim, I'm reading from the government's website. The UK will have to apply for listed states again if the UK was to leave in a no-deal situation on a different date. Well, you know, I'm just providing the information which the government puts out there.
Yeah, you're setting up a straw man. You know that's not how it'll be. But the other side of this coin that I never hear you talk about, let's say there are prohibitive tariffs for Northern Ireland into the Republic. They inevitably will be reciprocal, and you've already mentioned that in GB. Where does the Irish Republic sell most of its agri-food produce? Into GB.
Jim, I think I've been pretty clear that the Irish beef industry will be completely stuffed in that situation.
Yes, and here's the point.
The Irish beef industry is already suffering because a lot of buyers in the southeast of England are already reorientating their supply chains away from Ireland in anticipation of a no-deal Brexit. So I've no difficulty in saying the Irish beef industry will be in massive problems in the event of a no-deal Brexit.
But the point you never talk about is...
Import substitution?
What's the import substitution?
There, I'm talking about it now.
Sorry.
He's kind of like the Hulk, Jim. If you make me angry, nothing happens. If you make John Campbell angry, you're in trouble.
Well, it's much more important than that, Stephen. I'm not going to be on a programme where the key points are covered over. And I want to make this point. If Mr. Campbell mightn't like it, because he never talks about it, if we are priced out of the Irish Republic market, by the same token, the Irish Republic's agri-food industry is priced out of the GB market, their biggest market.
I've said that loads of times.
That creates... I know you don't want me to stress this point, but
import substitution. I've talked about this endlessly at the radio, Jim. Yes, we may have an opportunity in the GB market for that market to absorb some of our product that would otherwise go south. Yes.
This is the third time you have interrupted me in trying to make that point. People can draw their own conclusion.
Well, do you want me to make the point or not?
Why you don't want the point to be made?
I've just made the point.
He's just made it. For goodness sake.
Look, I have better things to do than conduct. Than be berated in a programme where I'm not given a chance to speak.
You're given a chance to speak. I'm being given a chance to speak.
Right. Well, then let me make it. If what you've been talking about happens, the flip side is that the huge void in beef and everything else in the GB market, Northern Ireland is perfectly placed, ideally placed, to fill that void tariff-free. And that will be a boost for our agri industry. That's the point that is glossed.
Is that right, John?
What we hear is a continual suggestion, our agri-food industry is going to be ruined because we're not going to be importing into the Irish Republic. If anything like that happens, the Irish Republic's industry will be so ruined, there will be a void which we will fill in GB with our exports.
Yeah, you know, import substitution is something I've talked about before. It's not necessarily a completely linear thing because you have to think about where the processing actually happens. So if you want to, say, for example, process milk in the Republic and then sell it on, that's liquid milk is difficult to deal with if the processing capacity is on the wrong side of the border. I don't foresee,
big
for example...
Issue is beef. Let's talk about those.
Okay. Right, yeah, so yeah, we'll be able to do some import substitution on beef and lamb. I'm quite happy to say that, and I've said that before.
Filling that void, and that will be a great boost to the Northern Ireland agricultural industry. So it's not...
Yeah, but I think you also, Jim, it's not a completely linear relationship, because you have to think then, what is the UK's tariff relationship with the rest of the world? So there's a new tariff rate quota, which the UK will apply to the rest of the world. So they will let more beef into the UK at no or low tariffs. So therefore,
it's will go in with no tariffs.
Yes, but in the tariff rate quota, some stuff will also go in at no tariff. So I'm just saying it's not a completely linear relationship that there will be more global competition into the UK market. That is something which the government wants to see. They want to see that cheaper food policy. And if they're opening up to the world, that's something they'll have to do. So yes, we could maybe fill some of our sales through that import substitution. But there will be other imports then from elsewhere in the world. So it's not a completely linear relationship there.
Yes, but
you'd accept that. You would accept that, yes.
No, I want you to accept something. That we're in
but you would accept
position.
That the UK is going to open up its market to more competition globally on
John,
meat.
If you want a question answered, you must give time. Do you accept...
No, don't ask him a question after he's... Please answer his, and then, of course, you can ask another one. Would you accept what John's just said?
I accept that when the scenario we've talked about, if it were to happen, Northern Ireland, utterly tariff-free, will be in the prime position to fill the void into GB. What the tariffs for other countries coming into GB are, no one knows, but there will be some level of tariff. So no matter what they are, Northern Ireland will be in the strongest and best position for selling into the rest of the United Kingdom. You know, you can twist, you can squirm about that, but that's going to be the economic reality. And I don't think I've ever heard John quantify how big that void would be in GB, what the opportunity would be for Northern Ireland agriculture. Maybe he'd like to tell us that, because I believe it would be huge.
There was the Anderson Centre report from, I think, last year, and maybe updated this year, which I think says that in... Just off the top of my head, I think sheep meat may be able to be pretty okay, but it depends on the TRQ, what the UK does in terms of its relationship with the rest of the world. So like I say, it's not completely clear and it's not an absolutely linear relationship. But yeah, import substitution. I've talked about import substitution plenty of times, Jim.
And will there be greater opportunity in quantity for what you call import substitution, greater than what we presently export to the Republic of Ireland?
I think that's unknowable at the moment, I would say.
I think it's quite clear.
What are you basing it on, though?
60, when you look at the 60 million market of GB as opposed to the 3, 4, 5 million market of the Irish Republic, I think it's pretty clear where the biggest demand would be. And when you compare that with what the Irish Republic already sells to GB, if it can no longer sell it, then there's a huge void to be filled, far bigger than what we sell to the Irish Republic.
Grand, yeah.
Well, I think that's the first time in all my listening to John Campbell's coverage in this that he has conceded that there's a gain.
What a victory. What a victory, Jim.
Well, it is a victory for truth. It is a victory for reality, yeah, to concede that even if the worst-case scenario happens and we suffer our trade into the Republic, there is even a bigger opportunity for us.
Well, that's your opinion. I don't necessarily think that you can say that definitively.
Well, maybe you should go off and research that.
Maybe
just
I will.
Compare what we sell to the Republic with what they sell to GB with what we sell to them. If we were filling that void...
Yeah, but I think you're making quite a static analysis there, that you know you have to look at the dynamics of what happens to stuff produced elsewhere in the UK,
not
then going to Europe, and what's happening with the tariff rate quota.
I'm just surprised that at this stage of the game, the BBC economics correspondent has never done that survey.
He's the economics editor for a start, Jim.
And
I think if we were to do a poll as to how respected John Campbell is in Northern Ireland, I'm sure he would come out of it very well.
Stephen,
so you don't have to personalise this, do you? If you want to personalise it about me.
Is it not disappointing that the BBC has never, in all its plethora of coverage about Brexit, mostly for the Remain variety, has never balanced the books by studying that simple issue? How big is the void that would be left for Northern Ireland to fill in terms of agri-food into GB?
Sure, there'll be some import substitution. Jim,
I've
been saying this for about 15 minutes.
Why have you never researched that? Why have you never compared what we sell to the Republic with what they sell to GB, and let's see where the balance of favour falls?
Tian Morris is the honorary president of the European Movement in Northern Ireland. Morning to you, Jane.
Good morning.
Does Jim Alistair make a strong point?
I think, can I say, that there is absolutely no value at all in spending so much time bickering the way you have been over the issues of trade and tariffs when we have such a short time limit. What we need now are constructive, creative solutions, and we need to put them forward, and they need to be based on what civil society stakeholders have been asking for many, many months, if not years. But now that it's coming to no deal, we need to get that into the agenda and work it out.
But Jim Allister is making the point, essentially, there's nothing to worry about a no-deal situation.
Of course there's something to worry about in a no-deal situation, and he knows that too. I mean, you're talking about trade tariffs, but what about farmers' pay? The single farm payments coming from Brussels over
50%. Our own money.
Over 50%, but I don't want to get tied up, Stephen, on these issues because I've got a bigger picture to look at. And we have got a proposal that I would like you to hear and I'd like your audience to hear. It's about, in the event of a no deal, a front start replacing the backstop so that and triggered on the day the UK withdraws from the EU so that that protects our businesses, gives us certainty and guarantees.
And what's the proposal?
The proposal is that we draw up, weave together a variety of proposals.
But what are the proposals?
Yes, can I explain, please? Give me a moment. There are three in particular. One is for the enhanced economic zone put forward by the Federation of Small Businesses, free ports in ports and airports throughout Northern Ireland. The second is a stability and association process, which is already in the...
Jane, I haven't a clue what any of this means, nor will ordinary people listening to this programme, like me, up and down the country. Oh, no, hold on a minute, though. All these big phrases that nobody... I've no clue what any of this means.
Okay, I'll make it simple for you. It's the backstop with bells on, and it's at the front rather than the end of the process. It's a guarantee instead of an insurance policy. Northern Ireland keeps all of its benefits from the European Union and stays in the customs union and the single market and keeps everything. It's the best of all worlds. Does that make it simple for you, Stephen? And the problem is you are trying to desperately to make things so simple. This is not simple. This is complicated. It needs a complicated solution. But the most important thing is that it comes from proposals from civil society.
Over two or three years to come up with a solution to this, where you can all work this out. Yes, all of you academics and experts can work it out and then try, for goodness sake, to explain it to people like me. I haven't a clue about half of this stuff. I can't understand it.
Stop and listen. Do you understand? A front start instead of a backstop. Do you understand that? Comes at the beginning of the process. The day the UK withdraws, Northern Ireland stays in the UK and keeps the benefits of all its EU benefits in the single market.
That has been rejected. So the DUP has rejected. Stay there, Jane. Stay there if you can. Right, we're going to come back to Jim in just one second or two. Annie and Drogheda. Morning, Annie.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Annie.
I'm just listening to Jim Allister and other people saying that the British government will not erect a border. Now, the British government sold Brexit in very simple terms to the English, very much the English people, who said, we're doing this on immigration. We really want to take back our rules on immigration and our control on immigration. And if they don't put up some kind of structure on the border, people can just come into the Republic, walk by foot into the north, and take internal flights or internal sailings from the north over to the mainland. And once that starts to happen, there will be uproar and the British government will have to, they will have to fulfil their promise to the British people. And the other thing is, when they're talking about, just when I was listening here to Jim Allister saying that, oh, it's okay that they will uptake, the farmers in the north will uptake the supply into Britain, they also have to freight, the cost of freight to Britain to take into their beef or their milk, which is going to increase the cost. And Northern Ireland farmers are already working very close to the line on profits. So things aren't as simple as the market.
Okay. Annie, thank you. And Eddie and Derry. Morning, Eddie.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
Go ahead, mate.
Could I point out to Jim that Europe did not decide to leave Britain. England decided to leave Europe. And Europe has no duty other than to abide by their own rules. They have no duty to be reasonable or to see the other point of view. All they have to do is abide by the rules set out and which Britain knew when they joined. So there's no point in them whining about it now and crying into their milk. And Europe are doing exactly what Europe should do. They have a set of rules, they abide by them, and everybody else.
But remember that a no deal doesn't suit some of those European countries either, France and Germany.
Of course it doesn't.
Indeed, the Republic.
But you can't throw out a rule book just because some of it doesn't fit you. You've got to abide. If you're going to have any sort of structure at all, you've got to have a set of rules, abide by them, and that's the best way for order of all kinds to be sustained.
Let me come back to Jim Morris this morning, and I see that David McNary, former UKIP leader, is joining us, UKIP leader in Northern Ireland, with us as well. Morning to you, David.
Good morning.
Morning. Morning, Jane, again.
Yes.
You see, if you think carefully about what Angela Merkel has said in recent days, that it's 30 days now to find find a solution to this, or there will be a no deal, is that not a hint of actually the EU wobbling? 30 days to find something else. In fact, that's a far cry from there will be no replacement for the withdrawal agreement. Now they're starting to say, well, there's 30 days to find one.
Yes, yes, yes. They are offering the UK a second, third, fourth chance to come back with a solution. And we are offering that solution. It is a Northern Ireland Cooperation and Association Protocol that keeps Northern Ireland in the EU as part of the UK. It doesn't in any way compromise the constitutional integrity of the UK, but it enhances Northern Ireland's position as a bridge between Ireland and the UK and a gateway from the rest of the world.
Oh, I hear you, but the DUP has said they will not countenance it, as has the British government.
Yes, 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 but they might change their minds because if there's these solutions are coming from civil society here. The Federation of Small Businesses has proposed things. There's all sorts of ideas. And by the way, all of it, from business, from farmers, you know very well, nobody wants a no deal. And so something has to be done and we need a creative solution. And this is exactly that. And the point about what you can have in terms of the trade arrangements, if you have a Northern Ireland product origin, then those products can flow back and forward and there'll be unfettered access. And that's quoting the withdrawal agreement, unfettered access from east, west, as well as north, south.
This is a withdrawal agreement voted down three times in the House of Commons.
And that's why what we do here is remove the backstop, exactly what Boris Johnson wants, remove it and replace it by a front start. Northern Ireland only on the day we leave. So we do exactly what is required and the rest of the UK isn't brought into it. It's Northern Ireland only and it's triggered on the day and it will safeguard our businesses, it'll safeguard our farmers, it'll be an absolute bonanza for Northern Ireland to have that.
Okay, David McNary?
I've been listening to the conversation, it's been a good conversation up until now. James, doing an EU hokey-cokey, you put the backstop out, you shake it all about, then you put the front stop in and you shake it all about and you see what comes out of the sky. I'm
trying not to picture the scene.
Yeah, me too, but I did picture it and that's what frightened me.
It's wonderful. Isn't it wonderful in a moment of serious potential catastrophe that David McNary is singing songs and playing games? I find that absolutely ludicrous.
Jane, never, never, never lose your sense of humour. Really, Jane.
Right, let's get into it, please.
It's a long time, I think, since you've been able to do the hokey cokey, but you're doing a good job of it.
Right, let's get into this,
please. Will you give us a dance then?
Of course I will, Jane, yes.
Good, good. Let's talk about this.
It's reprehensible, and we all know this, that when a country votes to leave in a big, big vote and it's knocked about for 3 years because of Theresa May's inefficiency, that the people are now beginning to realise, and only beginning to realise, when Mrs. Merkel says, Well, let's have a go in the next 30 days. People are beginning to realise that Germany and France are anxious to get a deal done tomorrow, let alone in the next 30 days. And the worry is, Stephen, and the worry is for all of us in the United Kingdom, we won't be able in 30 days to produce a Brexit deal that satisfies the EU. And what we will have done, we'll have created a backstop nightmare for everyone. And those 30 days are saying, if they don't work in 30 days, we might as well get out by the 29th of September. If the panic is out there now by these people who are inventing panic, some of it is real, I accept. But if the panic is out there now, by heavens, get your skates on, Jane, because Angela Merkel's just cut a month off the deadline.
But wait a minute. She hasn't. That is for the summit of the EU leaders in Brussels. That's when she wants a new proposal to go to Brussels for the summit. They're not. That is the date of the summit, and that's the time she's given.
Let me bring in some callers this morning, if you don't mind. David Nan along. Morning, David.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, David.
Stephen, you had done a programme yesterday about the loyalists and not representing them right. All right.
Well, we did a programme yesterday allowing loyalists to challenge.
Yeah, but I don't want to talk about loyalists.
Yes.
3 years I am sitting listening to you running down Brexit. 3 years I have listened to you running it down.
Well, you must have been listening to somebody else.
Never once, Stephen, have you done a programme about how good we are going to be after Brexit.
Well, that's what you're on to tell us, David.
When you listened to your programme back this morning.
Yes. Where we had Jim Allister, an advocate.
You and Mr. Campbell, Stephen, were two bullies.
Right.
And it was disgusting to listen to the party. He's talking to a man and bullying him. You need to get your act together, Stephen.
Okay.
We are getting out, and my community was devastated by the EU. Not everybody's
and tell us
about
and tell us what you think.
The back.
And tell us, David, what you think the opportunity is from Brexit.
My opportunity is we will get our fishing back. You see, everybody talks about farmers and how great farmers was, and how great this was, and how great that was. Whenever we joined the EU, Port of Ogie had up on 50 to 60 boats fishing. Our glass had 40 boats fishing. Kilkeel had upwards on 200 boats fishing. Now we're very lucky if we have 40 boats all together. That's devastation. You want to come and live in my community, you will get a gunk, Steve. A farmer's driving about in a big fancy car and the fisherman is on the dole, which you complain about regular too. So don't you tell me about the EU. The EU has devastated my community. But if you're going to be non-biased, you must do a programme on the good points.
Well, that, and that's
well
what we're giving you a chance to talk
and
about
you
today.
You have been failing that, Stephen. Unbelievably failing that.
So what difference will Brexit mean to fishermen, David?
It will mean we have an industry back.
How come?
That's what it means.
How come?
Well, I give you an instance, all right. We have all our all boats in Kilkeel all tied up because they have no quota for haddock. Okay. And there's a certain boat from Galway fishing haddock off Kilkeel. She has 10 tonne a month and it's totally legal. Now you tell me how that's conserving fish. All they have done is they have took it off our country and give it to another country.
Jane Morris?
If you go out and you listen, you watch, you will see the Frenchmen towing up and down regular and laughing at us. You need to wise up, you people. There's more than farmers in this world.
You're dead right, David.
Let's let Jane Morris reply to that, if you don't mind. Let's let Jane reply to that. Stay there, David.
That is a hugely important and honest contribution from that fisherman. And I think it's vital that we look at issues like this, because I know that I know that there's been problems about people about selling quotas, and I know there are also problems about about getting access to the EU market after Brexit for important produce from somewhere like Portavogie. And prawns, how are the fishermen now going to sell their products in the event of Brexit? These are two issues that I think are vital to be looked at. But I believe your caller, sorry, I didn't get his name, but it's hugely important you've got that you get voices like David's on your programme and listen to.
So you won't dispute, you wouldn't dispute then, Jane, if I'm reading you right, that Brexit is good for fishermen in Kilkeel?
Well, I'm saying that it could be an increased problem, and this is something they need to look at.
Which is an increased problem?
The sale of their products to and also one other point for David, please, if I'd appreciate if you could answer, is a fisheries border down the Irish Sea. Will that happen? And a fisheries border in Carlingford Lough or in Lough Foyle? What happens there? I would. We need a consultation with the fishermen to find a solution.
Go on, David.
I'll answer both questions.
Yes.
First of all, she's talking about our fish and stuff going to the EU. 99% of our crabs and lobsters now goes to China. So, I mean, that's just washed out of the water. That's just between me and you. Borders between the Irish down Carlingford Lough and Lough Foyle is already there. As you well know, they put the Kilkeel fleet out of Dundalk Bay and the southern waters. As everybody knows, it's been well documented. So the EU has already put the border there. What benefit is there to us? None.
Well, okay. On the point about 99% going to China, doesn't that prove that you can go to outside markets? If 99% is already going to China, and that can continue, but I know that there's a very large percentage of fish goes to mainland Europe, does it not?
Okay, let me bring in other callers, please. And thank you for calling, David. Call anytime. Finbar on one point. Morning, Finbar.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, if I could just run a few points regarding the issue of a failing supply of milk. It's been well covered in the media that the Northern Ireland dairy herd might well be totally culled. Now, milk, I believe, goes into a lot of products that we find on our supermarket shelves, and of course there's the obvious ones of butter, yogurts, etc. But the big one for me would be surely bread. If the bakers cannot bake bread, are we not facing a food crisis in this country? And if so...
Well, there's no suggestion now that we're facing a food crisis, Finbar.
No, hold on. I'm not making the suggestion, Stephen. It has been made in the media that we will have one regarding the dairy herd. I'm just saying the knock-on effects of that. Is anybody considering that? And what can we do about it?
Finbar, thank you. Derek in Carrick. Morning, Derek.
Hello, Stephen.
Yes.
I want to know, we've talked about Brexit for 3 years and all the border and whatnot, but Switzerland has got no borders around the EU whatsoever, and they're getting on, you know, fantastic.
Derek, thank you. And Stephen and Derry. Morning, Stephen.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I listened to you, Jim Alastair. You gave a great speech there about the benefits to farmers. And that fisherman also said that there's problems in the fisheries industry as well. So it says to me, Stephen, that there's a real need for a deal, because a no deal is going to be catastrophic for everyone. Because if you look at the problems surrounding the people who suffer from diabetes, there's going to be a problem getting the insulin through the Cali border there. So I think there is a need for the people who know these things.
And the Department of Health have, for example, across the water, the UK government has engaged in a £25 million contract so that they can ensure that vital medical supplies will be airlifted into the country. There are contingency plans in place for medicines like insulin.
But would a deal not be better in the long term? That's a short-term fix. But a deal would actually make these things seamless over a period of years, not months. And I think that's the way forward. I think we need a deal that suits everyone.
Stephen, thank you very much. And David McNary and Jim Morris, thank you. Morning to you both.